Connecticut to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. We made it to Tuesday, the day after the Iowa caucus, and a lot of you are probably like, well, you'll want to remember this day. How did you survive the great blizzard of 2024? What kind of survival tactics did you use? How did you make it through today? That's what you need to chronicle this moment in history today. Which is very important in case human civilization doesn't make it to the other side, I suppose, of the great blizzard of 2024. Anyway, enough of that. Coming up on today's program, Brian Taylor, running for Chief Justice. I didn't get him on. He went on offense last night at a gathering of the Mobile Republican Party. They had their candidate forum there at the Marriott. And everybody showed up, pretty much. So if you missed it, we'll talk a little bit about that. I stayed for the entirety of the presentation from Jerry Carl, who led it off with the first congressional district, to all the way to that last school board race that's going to be underway on the ballot coming up on March 5th. So we'll get into that. But Brian Taylor coming up at 9:30, 10:30. Congressman Parker Griffith, I do want to talk about Iowa. We'll get to that in just a moment, but we'll get his thoughts on that. Just an absolute media meltdown last night on the domination by Donald Trump. I got to talk to you about Joy Reid at MSNBC. Like, one of the dumbest, quote-unquote, smart people in television, I think. And then finally, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall, who we will, hopefully he gets it on scheduled today. And we'll talk about last night as well. But Iowa guys, just we all thought Trump would probably win. We didn't think it would be this much of a domination, did we? I mean, so much for visiting all 99 counties, Ron DeSantis. And I guess DeSantis is going to stick with it. We're not really sure. There is a real possibility here that DeSantis hangs around waiting to see how some of these court cases go for Donald Trump. This thing today with Jean Carroll, they got to be kidding me. This woman is crazy. When she was on TV, I don't know, just a bizarre behavior. But that's underway today, too. Well, I guess Nikki Haley won one county. Anyway, the dominating performance in the Iowa caucus last night, I don't think a lot of people, I think we, like I said, it was a possibility, but I don't think a lot of people thought, well, you know, Trump didn't put in the time in Iowa like the other candidates. No, it was the Trump supporters who made their way through the snow, through the weather, and now on to New Hampshire. And we will not remember the Iowa caucus. There was no anomaly here. There's nothing like Ted Cruz, Rick Santorum, or Mike Huckabee. None of it. It was a formality last night. I think it just shows the Republican Party's solidly behind the former president right now. We got, you know, there's some people who want to, I guess, pretend that you need, but it's this. I don't need to speak for you guys, but I totally get it. The system wants to tell you who your nominee is going to be. They want to tell you what to think. They want to tell you what's right, what's wrong. And people don't have to put up with that. So anyway, I mentioned Joy Reid, the dumbest smart person on television. And it's just like beside herself. And she like threw out the night on MSNBC over and over and over again. Started, was talking about white Christians and white Christian dominance, and that she was doing this thing. And I told, because I've never thought of this before, but this is what her, the way she, the way she kind of like rationalized the Iowa caucus outcome was that you who vote for Trump, you white Christians, you see Trump as like the America Messiah going to deliver the country back to you white folks, you white Christian nationalist from the brown people. And the non-believers. She said this like three or four times throughout the evening, that the reason that that Trump did well in Iowa is because he was not just the orange Jesus, but apparently the white man Jesus. And like anything more offensive than that, and just allowed to be like, oh yeah, and just shrugged off by everybody. Absolutely insane. Donald Trump's your white Jesus that's going to come and save you from the brown people who have immigrated to America. Because anybody else ought to like have been fired for that. But this is what they don't get. When they say that kind of stuff, it just reinforces a desire to push back against these elites. Because Joy Reid's just dumb enough to say that. But a lot of people on the left in the media think that. They really do. Because they have their own emotional reasons for being where they are ideologically. But there's a projection there. They don't understand. They haven't made any effort to try to come up with like a reasonable explanation of why a guy like Trump, a billionaire from Queens, is a populist figure. Why is he doing well? Why are people voting for him? Like an understanding of like the whole phenomenon, that what draws people to him, and maybe we need to take some lessons. You don't have to take everything away from it, but you have to understand it. And there's been no desire to understand it. Instead, it's just a automatic rejection out of hand. No benefit of the doubt. There's no benefit of the doubt with these people whatsoever. Once they made up their mind, when somebody has co-opted a narrative and decided that this is going to be like what your justification for being a Trump supporter is. I mean, they just grab it, reach on around it, don't let go. And there's like a real problem there, because what's really happening and what they are telling you is happening are way, way two different things. You don't really aren't sitting there thinking that Donald Trump is the white Jesus that's going to save the country from its sinful president or whatever. That you don't think of it in those terms. Now, maybe you do think Trump could save the country, but you're thinking of it more of a quality of life, economic, cultural standpoint, and not that bad hordes of anti-Christian marauders are coming across the southern border and you don't like brown people. Kind of idiotic. But I think people in this country are very tolerant of other views, with other ethnicities. And what they really want is to be left alone and be safe and not have the government do things to try to level the playing field that's going to impact them. Like a bunch of government spending is going to devalue the dollar and devalue their savings and devalue their salaries and devalue their, you know, assets. Well, their assets probably increase in value, but so I'm saying their savings is such as, I don't know, money market and savings accounts and but government policy that's kind of taking from the haves and giving it to the have-nots. Instead of creating a lane for them to have be haves as well, it's instead looking at the pie, and it, you can't grow the pie. You just have to take a little bit from everybody and give to those who don't have any. And that's the function of government, like some kind of great equalizer. And a guy like Trump comes along, and with this perception, this prevailing perception of these grand elites trying to engineer society how they see fit, Trump's the bull in the China shop, and he's going to wreck all that because the average person has to go through a lot of hardship to get what they get, to earn what they have. But it's just like watching these people on MSNBC talk about you guys who support, well, any Republican for that matter, even if you didn't like Donald Trump, as if they're like zoo animals that you're observing from afar in your native habitat of Iowa. Like it's a Discovery Channel documentary or something. It's such, and they're watching from New York City, watching these people in Iowa, and their behavior at the voting or the caucus, just really, really, you know, and they went through the snow to go vote for this maniac. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. You want to be in touch with the program? Hit me up there. Last night, Mobile County Republican Party. Few observations, Barrymore, Jerry Carl. Barrymore, just Mobile's just not going to be his home turf, but he did make a show there. And I don't know if, you know, sometimes they put people in the crowd to kind of make it seem like they have support when they, you know, it's astroturfed. The person to watch, I am telling you, and we're going to get her on at the end of the week, is Caroline Dobson. There's something very Tommy Tuberville / Katie Britt about her. My observation last night, how many people wanted to get a selfie with Caroline Dobson, get their picture made, and she threw out some red meat about Christianity back in public schools, border control, deportation of illegal immigrants. Much different than when we talked to her a couple of months ago, right after qualifying, when we kind of talked big picture economics. That's the coming craze right now. I thought Brubaker was fine. Senator Albritton really leaning in on fiscal responsibility and how he took the, well, Republicans, but him by extension as a general fund chairman, are exercising new fiscal discipline in Montgomery compared to what it was pre-2010, trying to eliminate proration and being tight with the funds while the government in Washington, D.C. kind of spirals out of control. I think it's a good message. Does it really resonate in AL2? I don't know. But AL2, it looks to me like there's just the three to watch are those three. And all the candidates were there, but we can get more to that in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Cotton on the roadside, cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Sing it. Song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Horst Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Still to come, Brian Taylor the next segment, Parker Griffith at the 10 o'clock hour, and John Wall at the 11 o'clock hour, so stay tuned. A few texts to get to here. Fire Dog with a report from the Eastern Shore. Cannibalism is rampant here. The Eastern Shore, the neighbor's dogs are looking mighty tasty. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I want to hear from you. How did you survive the great blizzard of 2024? Did you, you know, how many of you are looking at investing in a snowmobile, perhaps? Dog sled, I don't know, maybe. Our cross-country skiing, you know, there's a whole tourist opportunity here. Maybe we can get the Alabama legislature to pass some kind of economic incentive package. Winter tourism here in Baldwin County. Unnamed texter, are we seriously going to sleepwalk to another Trump loss? Republican Party has to sober up. Biden is too beatable by anyone else, but a rematch with the guy who's ushered in GOP losing streaks at every level, where Brian Kemp and Glenn Youngkin, it's over. It's Trump, okay? We've had a year of this discussion. Oh, it was just last night. Exclamation point. Nope. Our guy is Trump. Don't like it tough. I'm sorry. King of all unnamed textures. Correction, the dumbest, most racist, referring to Joy Reid. And as a brown voter, I find Joy's comments highly offensive. No, Joy Reid is the dumbest smart person. When I say smart, and I put it in quotation marks, she is Harvard educated and treated as if she is very, very, you know, just brainy, very philosophical, intellectual. But, like, you sit there, and I think, like, half or maybe three quarters of the people who are talking heads in the media who are pushing stuff like that don't believe it. They just, I got to say this because I want to promote a certain outcome. King. Joy Reid is a true believer. She really thinks that you think that Donald Trump is some kind of messianic figure that's going to come and save this country from the whatever the evils that she's ascribed to, people that look like her. She believes that. She thinks you are so dumb because she thinks she is much smarter on a different and totally different level of the ozone up there, way above you, and can comprehend these things about what's really going on and what people really think. And you just can't, the one-tooth racist out there, you just can't help your little old bitty self. They really think that way. I'm not even, I mean, we joke about it, but they really do believe this stuff, a lot of them. I'm not saying all of them believe it. You know, there are some people who just say whatever because it promotes what they're trying to achieve. But the true believers who go on to get more of a mainstream platform, there are some of those. And I would put Joy Reid in that category. And just all those years of watching her Saturday show, and now she's, for some reason, has a primetime show. People know Nikki Haley will fight for... A little slow this morning. Anyway, let's see. People know Nikki Haley won't fight for the American First policies. Trump has proven he will. Do you think the capture will be closer to 10 points? And for Trump, yeah. Although, I think a lot of smart people thought New Hampshire's where Trump's going to do well, and Iowa's where he would struggle. But that wasn't the case at all. The fact that he was able to dominate Iowa as he did, Donald Trump is in good shape if you're a Donald Trump guy. You got to feel pretty good this morning about that. And Kim Reynolds, Vander Plaats, didn't mean anything. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Just send it on down the line.
This is for the one who drives the big rig.
The first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town.
Welcome back to the Jump Horse Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Changed my mind, but mama tried.
Thanks for sticking around on this Tuesday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. Be in touch with the show. Shoot me a text. And I always go out of my way to make sure we get to every text message. Still to come, Parker Griffith, the official Democrat response of the Jeff Porter Show. Curious what he's got to say about last night's outcome in Iowa. And then we'll wrap it up with the counter to that, the Republican Party chairman here in Alabama, John Wall, for his weekly visit. So you want to stay right where you are. But joining us now on the line, he's a candidate for Supreme Court Chief Justice. Got to see him last night. Brian Taylor joins us on the line. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. Well, I want to get you on here. You went on offense last night, I thought, and I just to talk a little bit about that. And you know, you laid it out in your presentation last night, but you got really aggressive against your opponent on her home turf.
Well, I got a little worked up, and I'm getting tired of going to these Republican meetings and speaking to other groups. And Justice Stewart sometimes is at the same meetings I am as she was last night, and she often stands up and claims to be a conservative. She declares that she's a conservative, then she just vaguely tells everybody, "Just look at my record." And then she never says anything more about her record. And so I stood up last night after she said that, and I started listing case by case where she was not only the conservative vote, but she was the most liberal vote on the Supreme Court. And Republicans need to know that, and I said this last night, Republicans need to know that Democrats are organized across this country. They're organizing in red states as well, and they're running candidates and they're supporting candidates like Justice Stewart, who are running under the Republican banner, because they know that they can't flip the legislature. They know that winning the governor's office is very difficult. But judicial races are different, and so they have an organized strategy to try to pick off the Supreme Court's seat by seat, and I think that's what is going on in this case. If you just look at Justice Stewart's campaign contributions, she has over $600,000 in campaign contributions from trial lawyers, plaintiff's trial lawyers, traditionally a Democrat voting bloc, and she doesn't discuss her record. And the reason she doesn't discuss her record is because it is obviously liberal.
Well, now let's talk about this a little bit. When you say the trial lawyers have traditionally been liberal, is there a trend right now in Alabama where maybe they're not what they used to be? That the balance is a little different than it was, that perception that, and I'm not, it's hard to pin them down ideologically, I find these days.
Well, look, when you're talking about the courts, it is absolutely a difference between liberal and conservatives. Conservatives believe in applying the law as written, applying the Constitution as written to every case. Trial lawyers, for example, let's talk about punitive damage verdicts. Trial lawyers want to maximize the amount of punitive damages because that's money in trial lawyers' pockets. I don't blame them. That's the way they make a living. But because of that, they are in favor of trial judges who don't apply the constitutional standard on punitive damages. Recently, in a case right here in Mobile, the Spring Hill Hospital case, as you and I have discussed before, Sarah Stewart voted with the court to uphold the largest punitive damages verdict in Alabama history, in that type of case. It was 150% increase in punitive damages in just 2 years against Spring Hill Hospital. And when she made that vote, she did that over the dissent of the three most conservative justices on the court, who pointed out, look, we have constitutional guideposts for what amounts to excessive punitive damages. This case is a prime example. this punitive damages award is too high. It's not comparative to other cases of its kind where we've awarded punitive damages before. And Sarah Stewart and the majority in that court blew past the Constitution. They blew past, as Justice Jay Mitchell wrote in his dissent, they blew past the state law on the books that caps punitive damages, and they upheld this huge punitive damages verdict. That's liberal. That's not conservative. Conservatives apply the Constitution and the laws as written. We don't legislate from the bench. And Justice Stewart is fond of standing up and repeating that refrain. You know, I don't believe in judicial activism. I don't believe in legislating from the bench. Yet she does it time and again. And I mentioned last night too this Dollar General case. Where the entire court, except for Sarah Stewart, in an 8-1 vote, voted to relieve Dollar General of liability after a jury held Dollar General store liable because a car came careening through the parking lot and through the front of the store, crashing into the store, injured a customer inside, and somehow the jury saw fit to award damages to the plaintiff against Dollar General. It goes to the Supreme Court, and the entire Supreme Court said, that's not what the law says. There's no liability, no culpability, no causation on the fault of Dollar General, and they relieved Dollar General of liability. But there was one vote who voted to uphold that large jury verdict, and that was Sarah Stewart. Why does she do that? I don't know. She doesn't write opinions. She doesn't defend her votes because she's afraid that if she writes to explain her votes, they'll be used against her in a campaign commercial. So I had to call her on the carpet on that last night. And as you know, Jeff, I said, Justice Stewart, and she was there. I looked right at her in front of the crowd, and I said, Justice Stewart, I've been asking you for 2 to 3 months. Let's sit down. Let's have a one-on-one debate. Call it a round table. Call it a forum, whatever you want. But we need to talk about our competing judicial philosophies in front of the Republican voters, and I'm inviting you to do that again tonight. And she stared blankly at me. She didn't answer. Yes or no, she just sat there and stared. Everybody in the room saw it. She's afraid to debate me because she doesn't want to explain her votes, why she continues to vote for huge jury verdicts that defy constitutional standards. She can't explain it. That's why she doesn't write opinions defending them. She just votes and hits the next stop on the campaign trail and claims to be a conservative.
Joined by Brian Taylor, he's running for Chief Justice here in Alabama statewide. Brian, and you and I have talked about this in the past, but let's hit this again. Like, you take a different approach than a lot of these judicial candidates that I have on this program, and they want to talk about judicial philosophy, and you do that, but they're real wary of talking about court decisions, court cases, either you know, how they might have done something in the past and versus what the status quo is, or future cases that might be on the docket that they would have to consider as a justice. You're different in that regard. Talk about that and why you take that approach, why you think it's okay to kind of walk through these court cases, these potential court cases.
Well, first of all, I'm going to agree with Justice Stewart on one thing she said last night. On the judiciary, all we have is the trust of the people. She says that. I agree with her 100%. So it baffles me that she then stands up and lies about her record. We're fortunate in Alabama to have elected judges. We have elected judges for a reason. The Alabama Constitution ensures that we have a judiciary that reflects the values of the people of Alabama. And so the people of Alabama have a right to know whether or not their judges are deciding cases consistent with the judicial philosophy that reflects Alabama values. And, you know, I've heard this from other folks, Jeff, and people need to know the U.S. Supreme Court recently ruled in a series of cases, overturning Roe v. Wade, the Kennedy school prayer case that the court recently decided. These cases are not just one-off cases. They have announced a shift in the jurisprudence of this country, in the United States Supreme Court, back toward conservative values. And what I mean is this. Those cases overturn judicially constructed judicial activist tests and standards that have been used to remove God from the public square, to invent a right to abortion in the United States Constitution that doesn't exist. And finally, we have a U.S. Supreme Court that is saying, hey, That's wrong. That's not what judges are supposed to be doing. When we look at the Constitution, we're going to look to see what rights are, quote, deeply rooted in American history and traditions. That's conservatism. That's social conservatism. So I'm going to stand up all day long, and I'm going to say, look, as a judge, I will be fair and impartial. I'm going to keep an open mind in every case that comes before me. But I'll tell you this. I'm going to decide every case based on, if it's a constitutional case, based on whether it involves rights that are, quote, deeply rooted in this nation's history and tradition. And that is what the U.S. That's what the law is. That's what the U.S. Supreme Court says the law is. And so it is absolutely imperative that we have judges who understand this. And it's absolutely imperative that we have a chief justice who sets a tone on the court and sets a tone for the entire judiciary that's going to reflect the values of Alabama and the decisions that we decide.
But as far as individual cases, like I said, you take a much different tactic here, where I could say, well, how would you have ruled on this case? And whenever, you know, a lot of judicial candidates frown upon that, you know, I don't want to say, or I, you know, I'm not really, every case is different or whatever, but you kind of take it head on there and say, no, that ruling is incorrect. No. it's very different, right?
I think it's, look, it is entirely appropriate for a judge to look at a past case and say, based on the information that was available to the court and based on the writings in those cases, this is how I would have decided that case. This is who I agree with. This is who I don't agree with. That's entirely appropriate. And that's very different than saying, hey, if that issue ever comes before the court, this is how I'll rule. You know, we do have to be careful as judges to avoid saying something that in future cases might require us to recuse. Based on the appearance of, you know, favoritism or partiality. But when it comes to past cases, there's nothing wrong with this. And I'm a candidate. I'm a candidate for judicial office. The people have a right to know where I stand on cases that have been decided, whether I think they were rightly or wrongly decided.
Well, and so we don't see a lot of that, though. And we elect judges. And that's... You know, I've always told that's been taboo to ask about, and, you know, I try to respect that. But that maybe if we're going to vote on judges and we're going to have a system where judges are voted on, then maybe more of like, how would you have handled this case or whatever would be appropriate.
I think that's an entirely appropriate question. I'll say this, Jeff, as I go from meeting to meeting and rally to rally, and I see Justice Stewart and other judicial candidates there. I'm noticing too, people are hesitant to ask judges questions, very hesitant to ask questions. That's another reason why we need a debate. We need a roundtable discussion about our judicial philosophies. And so, you know, people need to know it's entirely appropriate to ask a judge any question you want. It's up to the candidate or the judge to decide how to answer that question. And when people do ask me specific questions that are not really appropriate for me to comment on because I want to avoid the appearance of partiality or favoritism in a particular case, I may not be able to tell you how I would, you know, what the outcome would be in that case, but I can tell you the approach, the judicial philosophy that I would apply. So just like I did, for example, when I'm dealing with constitutional issues and claims of rights in the Constitution, I'm going to follow the guidance of the United States Supreme Court. And I'm going to apply the Constitution as written and looking at the deeply rooted traditions and history of this country. That's how I would decide cases. And I'll stand up and talk about that all day long.
Well, and you know, for our listeners out there, at that point, by the time a case reaches the Alabama Supreme Court, I assume it's a lot like the federal level where the facts are established. And really, you're just kind of looking to see at the appeals court and that lower court, if they missed something or they got something in dispute that they should have allowed or whatever, that it's not necessarily like a, or at all like a trial that you would see, you know, what people think
of. That's a great point. Being an appellate judge is in a lot of ways a completely different job than being a trial judge. As a trial judge, you're a referee in the courtroom deciding what evidence can be presented to the jury or the fact finder, as we call it. A lot of factual evidence deciding what happened in a particular case. That's what the trial courts do. Now, those judges are called on from time to time to apply the law, particularly the law of evidence, as that evidence is introduced to the jury. Sometimes trial judges have to decide to exclude evidence based on case law and statutes where they allow evidence in that that one side might want to try to keep out. But it's those legal decisions that are made during the trial that are appealed. And when those issues come up to the court, to the appellate courts, it's incumbent on appellate judges, and in my case, in my election, the Chief Justice, to look at the law and to apply the law that was passed by the people's elected representatives in the legislature, that was written into the Constitution by the founders, and apply that law to the case, and frankly, to decide whether or not the trial judge got it right or wrong. Now, sometimes trial judges make mistakes. They're under the gun and they're in the middle of a trial. They don't have time like appellate judges do to research and really dig their fingers into the law like appellate judges do. And so it's not a swipe against a trial judge if they get reversed most of the time. But it's an important role that the judiciary plays to make sure, that the appellate courts play, the Supreme Court plays, to make sure that we remain a government of laws and not of men. And that's my biggest concern with Sarah Stewart. She has a history of judicially activist rulings that defy the constitutional standards. And when that happens, when you give a judge that kind of power, that pass to apply their own, to supplant the written law with their own personal policy preferences, we become a government of men rather than laws. And that's the most dangerous thing for our republic.
Brian, we've got to leave it there. Folks want to find you online. How can they do so?
I'm all over the place, all over the state. So I hope to see as many people as I can. Check the ALGOP website for local meetings in your area. But also, please go to my website at briantaylor.com. That's Brian with a Y. Taylor.com, and my phone number is on there. My email address is on there. I'll be happy to answer any questions that your listeners may have, Jeff.
Brian Taylor, ladies and gentlemen. Brian, thanks for making time.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. We are going to get Sarah Stewart on. I've been working on that. I got to see her last night, so it's not necessarily one-sided, but we will get to that in due course, I promise. We got to get a break in here. Right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Everybody made my
prediction. He's bound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound just like no bandit run.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. So, to come, Parker Griffith, the official Democrat response on the Jeff Moore Show. So, that's coming up here in about 45 minutes or so. Real quick, I was asked, I tried to look into this a little bit. I don't necessarily have the tools that maybe some of my other radio colleagues have when they do this, but it does look like you're going over the Dolly Parton Bridge up 65. There are some unknown crashes with unknown lane blockage, according to Algo, that are causing a delay. I'm joking about the Great Blizzard of 2024, but overpasses and bridges are still prone to icing because the bridges, they get colder because the air passes underneath. You don't need me to tell you that, but you need to proceed with caution, if you will. And I don't know what to tell you about an alternate route if you're heading up that way, but I might want to consider one other than going across the Dolly Parton Bridge up there, especially the Delta up that way because of so many of the bridges headed north or south, if you're listening, heading either direction on 65. Not sure what to tell you about an alternate route. There's, not many choices out there, but it does look like, based on what I'm looking at here on the AlgoTraffic.com map, that there are a few tie-ups and a few delays. And it also looks like even getting off there at that last exit, heading south, there are some delays on 225 down to Spanish Fort. So be aware. Today's not a good day to travel, I suppose. But anyway, we'll, more information comes available, we will pass it along. Let's see here. Let's get to some text. Democrats and rhinos don't mind shredding the Constitution. I guess. I think these guys really think about the Constitution, guys. It was like that first day after the Tea Party midterms where they read like the preamble or something across the floor. And every bill was going to have a constitutional scrutiny. That lasted for like a week, right? 251-343-0106. Hit me up on that text line. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Hour number two now officially underway. Get your text in 251-343-0106. Let me know what's on your mind. What you thought of Iowa last night? Big news, guys. Almost as big as the Great Blizzard of 2024. But Asa Hutchinson has suspended his presidential campaign. I know. You thought he was doing so well, and you thought Asa Hutchinson, this could be his time. This was the moment for him. America had been waiting for Asa Hutchinson to save this nation. But it just wasn't meant to be because people forgot who Asa Hutchinson was last night in Iowa. But his presidential campaign has been suspended, and I guess he's going back to Arkansas to do whatever it is they do in Arkansas. I know... I'm here for you. I know that this is a blow. A nation is in mourning. Asa Hutchinson was going to save us from Joe Biden. And it's tough, especially such news on a weather day that is so devastating to our psyche. It's like a Stephen King novel, right? There's snow on the ground. There's just mass amounts of snow here in Fairhope. And Asa Hutchinson's not going to save this country all at once. Like I said, I'm here for you. And we will make it through this together. We're all in this together, as they said during COVID. 6 feet apart. Wear your mask. Asa Hutchinson, presidential campaign. Rest in peace. Let's see. A couple of long texts here from another texter. Do you think there will be any effort by the Republicans in the Trump campaign to discuss the efforts of permanent Washington to foment civil disorder? Groups like Democracy Forward, the Georgetown Group, headed by Mary McCord, William Cohen, Sid Blumenthal, and others, apparatchiks from the permanent state, appear to be very clear in their desire to foment political unrest in this country and provoke a response where the military would have to be used. Is there going to be any effort, really, to drive that point home to the American public so that they can be aware of these machinations? Somebody got through the thesaurus out this morning. I don't think so. It might be a little bit overblown there, unnamed texter. No, I don't think, maybe they wouldn't mind seeing a little summer of disorder in the cities, but here's the problem. Unnamed texter, you could foment that, but the guy in charge right now is Joe Biden. And here's the deal. You start sowing these seeds of dissent and unrest in American cities, and couple that with the border, inflation, Joe Biden's poll numbers already at a low, continue to sink, and he loses by even bigger margins. So I see where you're going with this. They're like trying to set Trump up. They still think they're going to win in November. These people, when you watch them, when you watch Joy Reid, when you watch Rachel Maddow, Steve Kornacki, well, not so much him, but, you know, the MSNBC smart set, quote unquote, they really do think that no sane, rational human being will vote for Donald Trump again, because we lived through 4 years of him. Well, I don't care if NBC is reporting this. I don't. Here's what will happen. You'll see more of a crackdown on it. In 2020, the summer of, the Democrat, the blue city mayors didn't really crack down on it because they wanted America to appear in chaos. I would think that if they had to, they would clean things up. Oh, saying if Trump is elected. Well, yeah, I mean, all bets are off if Trump is elected. But Trump is still president. So Trump wants to use the military, but there are repercussions here for trying to circumvent the hot wire of the system, if you will, there on Dave Texter. Enough of that. Matt, next up, says, morning, Jeff. Well, morning, Matt. That was a good interview. Interesting interview. Normally, I've supported Judge Stewart in the past, and I would definitely like to hear her side on what he was making claims on. But he did make valid points, so I appreciate you trying to get both of them on your show. Well, the Brian Taylor, former Senator Taylor, he's not been able to raise a lot of money. He's got a puncher's chance in this Republican primary, but he is taking a very, very different approach to this race that I don't think you could get other judicial candidates to come on and talk about things in the same way that Brian is. It's very different how he goes about his campaign. And maybe it's that lack of resources, sort of a guerrilla warfare, try to get earned media, try to get the free radio appearances. But when you have these other judicial candidates on, I mean, it's much more above board. Hey, we're not going to get down into the how I would have ruled on XYZ case, how I would have, what opinion I would have written. That it's, they try to do it more in a way that's about a broader, big picture judicial philosophy. And it's hard to really nail these guys down because they don't want to be pigeonholed when they write their opinions. But Brian Taylor last night was really interesting, only that because, like, and I don't know how this plays in Mobile. It may play well in Huntsville or Birmingham or Montgomery, but you look at that room last night, Mobile County, and that is Judge Stewart's home turf, or Justice Stewart's home turf, and you know, kind of talking to some of the judges around town and some of the lawyers around town, I mean, they seem to think her being Chief Justice would be a big deal for this part of the state. And going that aggressive against her on her home turf might have done Brian Taylor more harm than good. But that's way, way into the weeds. It's a different crowd in that room versus what, you know, even this radio audience is much different. But I'm happy to hear any alternative points of view on that. Fire Dog giving us an update from the blizzard of 2024. Dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. That's only in what, Spanish Fort? Done. Good morning, Jeff. Good morning, Don. It's colder than a witch's you-know-what in a brass bra. So Donald Trump wins Iowa. Go figure. Some sources are calling him the most powerful human being in the world right now. Your thoughts on that one? Remind everyone, please, don't forget your pets tonight. Always bring in your dog. Don't leave your dogs out in this cold. No, he's not the most powerful. You can like Donald Trump, and I tend to. Donald Trump's got to prove to me that he can really rein in this deep state, this administrative state. So you talk about the separation of powers and the balance in the country. And, you know, I spent a whole segment or two yesterday talking about term limits and why I think that you need a legislative branch that in an ideal circumstance, term limits would be absolutely appropriate. But in this day and age when bureaucrats have so much control, so much power in federal government, that I kind of think it's more appropriate to have some seasoned pros, some seasoned veterans in the legislative branch that know how to play ball with the administrative state. But for Donald Trump to really prove that, I mean, it's got to be wholesale changes in the federal government. We got to talk about some Andrew Jackson kind of approach here and really look at the size of the state. When I say the state, I mean the federal government. Then you kind of take that, and this is what conservatives are supposedly always worried about, is the centralization of power, because that's what it would be with any approach to that. But the difference is the president's elected, and a lot of these bureaucrats are not. They're either appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate at the upper levels, or they're just civil servants with all of the protections of a union and big labor, and they act with impunity against the people. And there's no check and balance. It's just like, what was the snapper limits in the Gulf? Did you vote for that? No, but some bureaucrat at NOAA said this is what we're going to do. Well, why? I don't have to explain that to you. We'll do whatever we want. And that's just like one example, but they're all over the country. And these bureaucrats who, like I said, they act with impunity because they think they know better than you. They think they understand things better than you. They are the ones that make things happen, not these politicians just trying to court your vote. And that's a mentality that's rampant in Washington, D.C. And what Donald Trump's got to do if you want to win that moniker of being the most powerful human being in the world right now is attack that. Toothless Bammer writes this, just saw that John Kerry was going to retire at a date to be determined. He's 80. Didn't know that. Thought he was 90 or 95. He's been around a long time. But my wife is taken to watching Cheers reruns on one of the streaming services. John Kerry's in like one of the episodes of Cheers. So is Tip O'Neill. But think about being in public life that long, 40-something years. I don't know. What does John Kerry do in retirement? Jason says, Joy Reid. To the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Thanks for enduring the Great Blizzard of 2024, which is upsetting some of our internet connections throughout the Eastern Shore. I guess the internet speeds in cold weather travel much slower, and sometimes that causes us to get kicked off. I want to go back to this text. Joy Reid, LL, one of my favorite lectures was a black woman with straight blonde hair preaching the evils of cultural appropriation. Like she's a, as I was saying, she's a true believer. And she really, like, casts these aspersions and has a very low regard for you out there as human beings who vote for Trump. I mean, just, you got, they think that all of this stuff that, you know, your church on Sunday and praying and putting your faith in something that, they can't tangibly see or understand. It's just hocus pocus. And they really do look to our political leadership as where they would, that's where they would put that, spirituality. It's just weird to me, right? Because Barack Obama doesn't get any better than that. But I, you know, that's a big difference between sort of the elites in the media. And I think the bulk of the Republican voter bloc in America, just it's just these way different cultural values on things. Unnamed texture, doesn't that mean we need to limit or eliminate many positions in the federal government? I think you need to limit a lot. Everybody likes to say, well, the Department of Education. You know, like, you absolutely need to consider that. You absolutely need to consider the Department of Education, but that's hard. Need to, like, Department of Homeland Security. Streamline Health and Human Services, Department of Defense. I mean, you know, people would not like that because they think you want a strong military. But the military is one thing. The bureaucrats, the Pentagon is another. I think you look across the board, and even where there are sacred cows. But when do we ever downsize government in American history? Ever since the Constitution was signed and ratified, it's been upward trajectory ever since. Hey, Texas, if you're concerned about permanent Washington, then why would a Jacksonian spoil system be necessary? We've just lived through an administrative resistance to a duly elected president, and he's saying there's nothing to be concerned about. When they openly discuss on major media networks how they're going to do it again. Well, you say duly elected president. Unnamed texture, weigh the pros and cons of what you're suggesting. That will they foment some kind of when they foment some kind of unrest in American cities, are because while Trump's president, wouldn't that embolden him to accumulate more power and actually be what they're saying that they maybe that's what they want? They think that they can change that the outcome of the next election. I don't know, but if you're talking about it in the interim, like between now and November. I just think it gives Biden a bad look. And if you have all these little chaotic eruptions around the country, then it's just going to put Trump in a better position to win electorally. Now, you know, y'all thought, January 6th, what do you think? If Donald Trump wins in November and he beats Joe Biden, what does January 21st, 2025 look like in America? Like what changes immediately? All of the pomp and circumstance and celebration. Then what? Do you bring in the National Guard and maintain order in Washington, D.C.? This is always like every presidential election now, we're going to have to board up windows in a major American cities because you're afraid of, like, rioting, win or lose. All right, enough unnamed texture of the coming revolution in America when Donald Trump is after. Just stop. Five one three four three zero one zero six. Trump wins Iowa last night by 56,000 votes. Doesn't seem like a lot to me, but our caucus goers, I should say. But that's where we are, and a pretty strong showing. And on to New Hampshire. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Take it on down from Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Birmingham. Ooh, Montgomery. Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jump Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Still to come, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall. That's in the next hour, so you will stick around for that. Text line 251-343-0106. Hit us up there. Let us know what is on your mind. Joining us now, a man who is, I am sure, weathering this cold weather up in North Alabama with a big bottle of Wild Turkey celebrating Trump's dominating performance in Iowa, the official Democrat response to the Jeff Porch Show, former Congressman Parker Griffith. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Jeff, good morning. We're cold. The roads are slick, but they're drivable. And I think it's 10 or 15 degrees right now. It's supposed to go down to 7 or 8 tonight. But we're doing well. If everybody's got their water running, I'm sure the utility department's going to be really happy at the end of the month. But anyway, we're doing great. And the Trump had a resounding victory in Iowa. DeSantis says he's staying in. Haley says she's going to do better in New Hampshire. The momentum doesn't seem to be with either one of those people. Ramaswamy, I love that name. I don't know. It sounds like a
easy
Ramaswamy. It sounds like something you'd say if you hit your finger with a hammer. Ramaswamy. Anyway, he's out.
Oh my God.
He's endorsed Trump, and I don't know why we should be surprised at this. Iowa is a state of 3 million citizens. It's about half the size of Alabama. It's 90%+ white. It's rural, agricultural, and even its populous cities are very homogeneous. So it's not a barometer of things to come as far as the general election is concerned, but it's certainly tells you where the Republicans are going to go. And we as Democrats are hoping that Trump is the nominee. He's beatable. If they keep letting him talk, he's going to be our biggest supporter. And so I'm not surprised at Iowa, but it was a great victory for Donald Trump. And I think it'll feed his ego and probably he'll become even less inhibited. So
I'll say this. He did not spend a lot of time there and dominated. I mean, like, so I get what you say about Iowa. The reason Iowa and New Hampshire go first, I always thought, is because they were considered to be more kind of purplish states that they could go either way, and they were a true barometer of the country. It's why Alabama doesn't go first, or Utah or whatever, because then you give the more right of center, more right winger heads up on the process. So you want something that's kind of moderate, but maybe there's something to that Iowa really isn't moderate anymore. And that's why Democrats are sort of gravitating away from Iowa as their first caucus.
Well, I agree, Jeff. I think that's true. I think Iowa is not a whole lot different than Alabama in the sense that the evangelical core is very, very strong there. Its older, uneducated core is very, very strong there, just like it is here. And I think it's a Trump state, and we wouldn't be surprised if Trump won that kind of victory here in Alabama. And I'm not really surprised at Iowa. I don't know anything about New Hampshire except it's got two senators and 2 million people. And California's got 40 million people and two senators. It's an interesting combination our founding fathers developed. But anyway, I watched Trump have to hold on to the rail and watch his feet as he walked up on the victory platform. So, you know, I think it's true what they're saying. You know, the guy's not that mobile, and he's probably as fraught with medical danger as Biden is.
And, I don't know. I got to give the edge to Biden on that one. There's some problems there. But Iowa, I mean, Congressman, in 2008, 2012, Barack Obama won that state. It was 16 when Trump flipped it to red. It, you know, and then I know in 2020, but I just. Is Iowa gone? I mean, for Democrats, you wouldn't think that a Democrat could win Iowa again?
I think they can. I think Obama won, not because he was Obama, partly because he was a young, fresh-faced, great smile, great orator. But I think they were voting against Bush. I mean, we were hemorrhaging jobs.
Even in 2012?
Out of control.
Even in 2012?
Not so much 2012. No.
Well, no. I just. I think Iowa's not. Iowa is not even. I mean, considering Alabama versus Iowa, what I think is true about Iowa, Congressman, is the Republican Party probably there is more like Alabama's Republican voter, but it's Democrat. It actually has Democrat voters, where they're kind of in Alabama. You don't have as many. But in the cities of Des Moines and Council Bluffs and wherever, Sioux Falls or whatever there, that you do have Democrat voters who aren't just, you know, like the black power structure in Alabama, but they're actual kind of, you know, New York Times latte-sipping Democrats or whatever you want to call them. And that's – there's enough of them. There's enough of them to make a difference and squeak out an election. So there's more of a balance in Iowa. Iowa's not like Alabama in that regard.
I don't know whether Iowa could be considered a balanced state with 90% white and being that small and that agricultural.
But partisan-wise, I mean – racial and all these other demographics, fine, you're right. But as far as partisanship, I mean, it's starting to lean more right. I would agree with that. But it just but it seems like it – that's why it's always gone first and gone early. But name another state that, you know, that you could put in there that has that kind of balance. You don't know which way it's going to go. It could go either way. Maybe that's Georgia. Maybe it's I don't know, like a Wisconsin or Michigan, but that was always like I never like understood why would you have Iowa first? It doesn't make any sense. Like, who wants to go to Iowa ever, right?
Really, it's just a bad habit. It's traditional. We just haven't recognized the demographics and the changes that have occurred in America, so we just continue on. It's the press gets there 2 years early. And the candidates get there 2 years early, and it's an economic. It's kind of like a real plus for Iowa, but I think the contest is going to be a nail biter if Trump goes to the general, which it looks like he is, and Biden goes to the general, looks like he is, I believe this is going to be a absolute nail biter. I think Michigan, Pennsylvania, some of the states we know that can make or break the presidency are going to be at the forefront, and it's going to be tight. I mean, close. It's going to be determined by turnout, and
there's just not much enthusiasm on your side of the coin, though, is there?
Well, not yet. But I think as the smoke clears, the static disappears, and people have a chance to look at and evaluate the two candidates and who they want to represent America on a worldwide stage, I think the independents are going to swing more to Biden than they will to Trump. I think there are voters who voted for Haley or DeSantis in Iowa will not vote Republican in the general. The baggage that Trump brings to America and to our reputation, I think is going to make a difference to independents. It won't make any difference to the evangelicals. I mean, these are superstitious, myth-believing individuals. And
listen to you.
And they've locked on to Trump. I mean, he's their Jesus.
But you're doing exactly like this is why Trump succeeds, because guys like you and the MSNBC crowd ascribe this like this viewpoint that Trump supporters have of him, that he is like some kind of messiah and that he's going to rescue the country from illegal immigrants and brown people or whatever. And all it does. All it does,
that's
though,
what they
but all it does, I don't think that's true at all. But it just ticks them off and makes them even more solidified behind Trump. I mean, if you don't want that outcome, I mean, why do you and not you, but you in general, like, why do you guys like act with such scorn toward these people rather than if you wanted to win, if you really wanted Biden to win, if you wanted Democrat philosophy, and I'm not talking about the woke stuff. I am talking about the social safety net and everything that you guys believe in. If you thought that was best for the country, why make this about the people who are chasing Trump? Why not figure out why they support a guy like Trump and try to tap into that? Rather than dismiss it as some kind of like religious thing that they have. I've never understood that.
You've got to listen to them. There's no point in anyone trying to change an evangelical's mind. It'd be similar to trying to change any radical person's mind about any belief. These people are locked in. Even if they know better, they can't step back from it because they don't know how to save face. They know Trump's a criminal. They know Trump does not represent the best of America.
Congressman, I do a talk radio show. I run a conservative website. I do a talk radio show. I know who these people are, and I don't think it's that at all. I think it's a quality of life question. I mean, yes, they are going to be conservative in their cultural values and beliefs. But in their view, that the tangibly, like, you know, that you can show empirical data and everything, that their quality of life is not where it was 4 years ago pre-COVID. And this was like 4 years ago at this time, was about the time that right before COVID set in, you are far better off as an American. Now, COVID may have said something to do with the progress we made or whatever, but that the Trump years before COVID weren't all that bad.
Well, what's interesting to me is Trump is running as a Republican, and the Republican Party said they were for smaller government and less debt. Trump did just the opposite. It doesn't make any difference to these people. Makes no difference whatsoever that he increased the debt by $7.8 billion.
He is not the conservative's conservative by any stretch. But yeah. he's this populist figure in an era where we're told that we have to appreciate like a globalist point of view, that everybody is the same and this push toward equity. And he's the guy that comes in flipping the bird with the American flag. It's patriotic. That says Merry Christmas. That tries to defy all of these tenets that the left has adopted for whatever reason. I don't know why, but they have. And that's why he does. But you guys on the left, you don't pause and say, well, so he's not really that conservative, border control and all that. Yeah, but, you know, from a more domestic policy side, it's not like he's William F. Buckley. He's a populist. Why doesn't the left, rather than cater toward AOC and that crowd, because that's what they're doing right now, especially with the border congressman, why don't they try to capture their share of that Trump populism and just, you know, because, you know, it hadn't been that long ago. Democrats used to be the populist party.
Well, I agree with you. The radical left and the radical right are exactly the same. They're not going to be shaken by reason.
Sorry to keep interrupting you. The big difference is the radical left has an ideology that is left. It is identifiably left of center and liberal. Where the radical right, that's just a label, a moniker, because it's not really right. I mean, it's not conservative. It's not like shut down the Department of Education. Let's go to the gold standard kind of like, you know, radical right policy like the left is. It is this sort of something in between.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. There's another side of this. It's a multifaceted. I think one of Trump's assets has been the dysfunctional Congress, both Senate and Republican, their inability to get anything done. They can't pass a budget. They can't do anything without drama and crisis. And I'm talking about AOC and little Jimmy Jordan. I'm talking about both of them. We have lost faith in the Senate and the House, and people are saying, well, hell, we can't do any worse. Why not Trump? At least he's not one of them. And I think that's part of his strength. I certainly agree. I think the evidence, though, at the end of the day, when we've got to choose between a Biden and a Trump, Biden has guided us through some really treacherous economic waters. He's still in the middle of Israel, Palestine, Ukraine, and Russia. We've got major players out there, Russia, China, Iran, et cetera, against us. And I think Biden is a steady man who knows how to handle that kind of thing. I think his personality is going to be his asset, and I think Trump's personality is going to be a negative for him, because nobody in the world can trust what he will do or say. And since he had those bone spurs and never defended America when he had an opportunity to, we have no reason to trust Trump to make good, solid decisions.
Congressman, I'm sorry I kind of filibustered you there, but we got to leave it there. We're out of time. But
that's okay.
We will do this again soon.
Politics.
We will do this again soon, and we'll talk again. So thanks for coming on such short notice.
Sounds great. You guys take it easy and stay warm.
Former Congressman Parker Griffin, the official Democrat response to the Jeb Poore Show. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Getting crazy. Getting hammered, sitting right here at the floor of Bama. At the floor of Bama.
I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest.
bless my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Tuesday morning. We do appreciate it. Text line 251-343-0106 as I try to regain my voice after yelling in the last segment. The difference is, like, yeah, you have Republican slash conservative zealots and you have liberal slash Democrat zealots. The difference is the ideology that the zealots on the right aren't really wedded to a far, far right ideology. Now they will have that applied to them, that label just bestowed upon them, because we're redefining what far right means in the media. But no, if you just look at it like a pure, like, straight up honest assessment of, like, left versus right, and where policy lines up on that line, on that continuum, on that spectrum, then you'll find that the far left is way more socialism as a solution to the country's woes, where the right, yeah, there's a little bit of leftist ideology, but not like the mirror opposite, if that makes sense. We can talk more about that next segment. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. I keep on rolling.